Amy, Dan, and the others climbed into a cab outside of Union Station in D.C. and headed over to the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. It was located on the National Mall. The cab dropped them off on Constitution Avenue, and they hurried in. Like almost all museums in D.C., the admission was free because all of these facilities were paid for largely with tax dollars and thus open to the country's citizens without charge. The space inside was divided up into themes. The first floor focused on transportation and technology. There was a large early-style locomotive anchoring this floor. The second floor housed exhibitions on American lives and ideals and the National Museum of African American History and Culture Gallery. The third floor focused on wars and politics, and located here was a large exhibition on the men who have been president of the United States. Amy and the others paused in the large lobby and gazed around.
"Where do we start looking?" asked Dan.
Atticus said,
"It makes the most sense to ask someone who works here. Perhaps there's a permanent Lewis and Clark exhibit."
"Good thinking," said Amy.
But she added in a warning tone,
"Be on the lookout for Isabel Cabra, and I doubt she'll be traveling alone, so keep watch for her bodyguards, too."
They headed over to the information desk and were told that there was a Lewis and Clark display on the third floor. Meriwether Lewis and William Clark, both veteran soldiers, had been commissioned by President Thomas Jefferson to explore the Northwest Territory that the United States had acquired from France as part of the Louisiana Purchase of 1803. Their journey led them all the way to the Pacific coast. Early on in the trip, Lewis and Clark were joined by a Shoshone Indian named Sacajawea. She helped guide the expedition westward over the Rocky Mountains. It had been the longest, most arduous expedition ever undertaken in America, and both Lewis and Clark became revered as two of the country's greatest heroes. They took the stairs up to the third floor and quickly found the display area. Items from the legendary expedition were under glass, and there were information cards under every item, explaining what they were and how each had been used by the two famous explorers. However, after 20 minutes of examining all of the items, Amy and the others were no further along in their quest. Dan said,
"If there's something helpful here, I don't see it. I hope this wasn't a huge waste of time. We could have been halfway to the West Coast by now."
Atticus said firmly,
"My mother was dying at the time. I doubt she would have told me useless information."
Dan paled and said,
"Hey, At, I didn't mean it like that. But she could have been delirious." "No, she wasn't," said Atticus emphatically. "She knew exactly what she was doing. I'm sure of it."
Jake added, "And Isabel Cabra is in town, too." Amy said,
"But we don't know that she actually came here. As you said, D.C. is a big city. We just speculated it was to look at something pertaining to Lewis and Clark." She added in a hollow voice,
"Well, I speculated."
While they had been talking, a woman had walked over to them.
"Lot of interest in Lewis and Clark today," said the woman.
They all stared at her. She was tall, around 50, with brown hair and large brown eyes. She wore a striking red dress and had kindly features.
"You mean other people have been here to see the display?" asked Amy.
"Just a few minutes ago there was someone," said the woman. "I'm Dr. Nancy Gwynn, by the way. I'm one of the curators here. My specialty is Lewis and Clark, actually."
"Then you're just the person we want to see," said Amy.
"Really? Why is that?" asked Dr. Gwynn curiously.
Amy said, "We're students, traveling here from out of town. We're doing a team research paper for a regional competition on Lewis and Clark. There are many things that are known about them, of course, but we were hoping to find out some things that aren't so well known."
She pointed to the display cabinet.
"We've covered all of these items in our paper, but do you have any other artifacts from the expedition?"
Dr. Gwynn nodded.
"Yes, we have many that aren't on display. It's a question of space and interest."
"And there seems to be interest," said Amy. "Like you said, someone else was in here asking about them. Was that person my age by any chance? A girl about my height?
Blonde hair, shoulder length. You see, it's a true competition, and there are college scholarships at stake.
Dr. Gwynne shook her head. No, she was much older, in her 40s. Dark hair, attractive, very intense. In fact, she seemed familiar to me for some reason.
The four looked at each other. That was undoubtedly Isabel Cabra.
Was she alone? Asked Dan. That sounds a lot like one of the teachers who's working with the students we're competing against.
She was alone, but now that you say it, she did seem sort of teacher-like in her demeanor, and she was very articulate.
I'm sure. Did she ask to see anything out of the ordinary?
Asked Amy. Dr. Gwynne thought for a moment.
Well, just one thing, now that you mention it, the Lewis and Clark compass. She was quite taken with it.
Compass, said Amy.
She snapped her fingers.
That's right, the famous compass.
She looked at the others.
We could use that as one of our centerpiece themes for the research paper.
She turned to look at Dr. Gwynne.
Is there any way we can take a look at it, too?
Dr. Gwynne shook her head. She had an appointment. It's the Smithsonian's policy not to bring articles from the back of the building without an appointment. Amy looked crushed.
She told us we didn't need an appointment when I asked her last week. She's also on the competition's organization committee.
Well, that's hardly fair, said Dr. Gwynne sternly. It seems that she was trying to deliberately mislead you.
Amy and Dan said nothing, but looked at her hopefully. Dr. Gwynne said,
If she got to see it, I think you should too. That's only fair. And one of the Smithsonian's most important missions is to educate and enlighten.
Give me a few minutes.
After she walked off, Dan said to Amy,
You get better at lying every day. Should I be worried?
She smiled.
I'm surprised you weren't worried a long time ago. And look who's talking. That sounds like a teacher of the students we're competing against.
Hey, I just go with the flow,
replied Dan, grinning. Atticus added,
But now we know that Isabel was here, and she was interested in something about Lewis and Clark.
You were right, Atticus,
said Dan.
Good call on your part.
Nancy Gwynne came back holding a black case. She had put on white gloves. She led them over to a table in a corner, set the case down on it, and opened it. Dr. Gwynne said in an excited tone,
This is the famous compass of Lewis and Clark. It was actually purchased by Meriwether Lewis around 1803 in preparation for the mission that President Thomas Jefferson was sending them on. When the expedition returned to St. Louis in the fall of 1806, very few of the instruments and equipment they had purchased for the trip had survived. Fortunately, this compass was one of them. It was kept by Clark as a souvenir from the journey. Later, he presented the compass to a friend of his. His descendants donated it to the Smithsonian in the early 1930s.
She took it out of the black case.
It cost about $5 back then. Lewis purchased it from a well-known instrument maker, Thomas Whitney. It has a silver-plated brass rim, and the box is mahogany. It also has a leather carrying case. It's a very handsome piece.
Amy and the others crowded around for a better look, but none of them could see anything helpful in the object. On a cue from Amy, Jake and Dan used their cell phone cameras to take shots of the compass. Amy said,
Can we see the bottom of the box?
Funny, said Dr. Gwynne. That woman asked the very same thing.
She turned it over, and Jake and Dan surreptitiously took photos of it with their phones. Amy leaned closer to look at the box. She said,
Is that writing on there?
Dr. Gwynne looked more closely.
Yes. It seems to be a series of numbers scratched into the surface, although it's been worn down over the years, of course. No one has ever been able to figure out what they mean. It was probably just a notation that either Lewis or Clark made during their journey, and the wooden case made a handy place to do so, I imagine.
Amy glanced at Dan. They both knew that Lewis and Clark had been members of the Thomas branch of the Cahills.
The Tomas were known for their stubbornness and the fires in their bellies. They had landed men on the moon, and Lewis and Clark had fought their way to the Pacific coast. Amy doubted that they would have scratched some meaningless numbers into the back of a compass box that William Clark had made sure would survive over the centuries. Dan said,
"Did the woman write the numbers down?"
Dr. Gwynne glanced at him strangely.
"Why, yes, she did."
"Thanks so much," said Amy. "You've been a big help."
"In fact, we almost had a disaster," added Dr. Gwynne.
"A disaster?" asked Amy.
"What do you mean?"
Dr. Gwynne looked chagrined.
"It was my fault, really. I shouldn't have let that woman hold the compass. She dropped it. It bounced under the display case over there, but she was able to get under the table and retrieve it. I checked it over. There was no damage, thank goodness."
Amy and Dan looked at each other but said nothing. As they turned to leave, Dr. Gwynne said,
"You all were a lot nicer than she was. I hope you win your competition."
Amy and Dan turned back and together said,
"Me too."